What was Cott like back then?
Jim was one of the finest fielding pitchers, and he was a good hitter. When the hitters, pitchers hit in the American League, he was a fine hitter, great fielder. Won 16 Gold Gloves as a pitcher. I remember playing first base one night when Jim took a one-hop line drive in the mouth, and the ball ricocheted over to Rich Rollins at third. Rich fielded the ball through to first base for the final out of the inning. And like I always did, I looked at the ball, see if there was any scuff marks or anything, and I looked at the ball, it had Jim's teeth, part of his teeth in the ball. And of course, I gave him the ball. he probably still has it, but he didn't miss a turn. He had oral surgery, and he was back in the lineup his next wow. turn, which, you know, not many pitchers would have done
yeah,
that.
That's for sure. How about pitching-wise? Could you describe him as a pitcher?
Jim Cott? Mm-hmm. Jim changed his style of pitching over the years, but he was pretty much a fastball, curveball type pitcher. And he was a pitcher that learned to pitch inside to right-hand hitters, and he just became an outstanding pitcher.
Worked very quickly.
Well, he did that later on in his career. He didn't always work with that quick motion that he developed in his later years. But
yeah, people were when he was with the Phillies, the reporters in the press box were disappointed because they would shut the food off after the fifth inning.
His quick games, he'd pitch a lot of quick games and
very quick.
Yes.
How about Camilo? You said you were with him now for
as
a long
quick
time.
As quick as Jim Cott pitched games, Camilo was a slow worker, and he was 3-2 on a lot of hitters. But he was a great pitcher. He was one of the greatest curveball pitchers that I've ever seen. He threw a good overhand curveball and changed speeds on it, and excellent competitor.
What was it like for infielders with pitchers who pitch slow or pitch fast?
Well, as a fielder playing in the infield or outfield, you always like to see the pitcher work as rapidly as possible, because if you're always pitching from behind or full counts on hitters, you have a tendency to not be as alert maybe as you would if you're working faster. You know, it's better, I think, for a pitcher to work a little faster.
Okay, you mentioned a couple of minutes ago about not being afraid to pitch inside. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like then? Because they don't pitch inside now the way they used to when you played.
In those days, when I played, it was just part of the game for the pitchers to brace the hitters back. And we thought nothing about it. And I got hit an awful lot of time. Fortunately, I never got hit in the head, but I got hit all over my body and never really thought much about it because it was part of the game. And I think that pitchers had to do that in order to help control the game, because if you can't pitch inside, hitters are going to get on top of that plate, and it's going to be very, very tough to pitch. Then the game went through a dramatic change where pitchers weren't allowed to throw inside much. In fact, they were ejected from the game a lot because of pitching inside. And I certainly don't condone pitchers throwing at hitters' heads. But I think in order to be a good pitcher, you have to move the hitters back away from the plate.
Now, when someone hit a home run ahead of you, what would happen?
A lot of times they would throw at the next hitter behind you, and that happened a lot of times. I don't know why they pick on the next hitter after someone hit a home run, but they used to do that.
Well, that must have happened a lot on your teams, because there were a lot of guys that hit home runs.
They did that a lot, yes.
Now, where in the lineup were you hitting?
Mostly third and fourth and sometimes fifth. And that, but mostly third and fourth, and that was fun hitting. And I remember in 1969, we had Cesar Tovar leading off, who got a couple hundred hits. Rod Carew hit second, he got a couple hundred hits, and most of the time Tony Oliva hit third, he got a couple hundred hits, and then I hit behind those guys, and it was fun because there was always somebody on base to drive in, and I had my best year that year.
All right. So you win the pennant in 65, and you come back in 66. Do you remember much about that year?
Well, it was the year the Orioles won the pennant, played the Dodgers in the World Series. I can't remember how many games we finished out, but we weren't a bad...
You finished second that year.
Mm-hmm. Finished second. How many games out, do you know?
You were 89 and 73. So.
Well, that's a good year for us. Mm-hmm. We just were a little bit short. The Orioles had a fine ball club that year and went to the World Series, and we didn't.
Right. Now, that was, I think, Frank had come over by then. And really it changed that
team. That's right. Frank Robinson was there, and that was the big difference with the Orioles. And of course, with Frank and Boog Powell and Brooks, and they had an excellent ball club and a fine pitching staff.
Yeah, that was the, I believe, the beginning of the Palmer years.
I think it was. Yeah. McNally and Palmer.
And Cuellar. They were tough.
We had to face them in the playoffs 2 years there.
Mm-hmm.
When they first 2 years of the divisional setup.
And right. And when did the divisional setup start?
1969 was the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the year Billy Martin managed the Minnesota Twins, and we went on to win our division. The Orioles won the East.
Mm-hmm.
And we played in the playoffs. In those days, it was a five-game series, and the Orioles beat us three straight.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought our ball club was as good as the Orioles that year, but we didn't win. We didn't go to the World Series. They went to the World Series and played the Miracle Mets that year.
Yeah.
And I used to kid Brooks Robinson about that, saying that I couldn't understand why they let the Mets beat them. If the Twins had been there, the Twins would have beaten them.
That was pretty.
It'd have been a difference. The history books would have been written a little different.
That was pretty shocking. I mean, from Svoboda making the catch in the outfield and Tommy Agee.
Yeah, that was certainly a team of destiny.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Miracle Mets.
Again?
No.
44 home runs, 113 RBIs. Your team has a great season. Sam Mealy is then replaced by Cal Irmer, who you mentioned played under in the minor leagues.
Mm-hmm. Cal was a great, I pretty felt bad for Cal, what happened that year. We had an excellent year. Went down to the final series of the season with a one game lead and two games to play going into Fenway Park in Boston. And Jim Cott started that first game.
Mm-hmm.
We were leading in the game. And I think it was about the fifth inning of the game, Jim hurt his elbow, did something to his elbow, had to be taken out of the game, and we went on to lose the game. And then the final day of the season, we played the Red Sox even. And Dean Chance, who had such a great year for us that year, won 20 games, started the game. And we were winning that game and ended up losing that game for the pennant. It was a wonderful year for the Boston Red Sox. They went on to play the St. Louis Cardinals in the World Series. But for the Minnesota Twins, it was a long, long plane ride back to Minnesota. Sad day for us. And I'll never forget that day.
Do you remember who pitched for the Red Sox those two games?
Jim Lomborg was... one of the pitchers. Mm-hmm. That did an excellent job, and I can't remember who won the other game.
Okay. Now, earlier in the year, you hit a ball into the upper deck in the Metropolitan Stadium and broke a couple of seats.
I think it was a whole row. You know, the older you get, the farther away it is from something that you did, it gets more dramatic. But I don't know why the ball went in the upper deck. That was a ball that I hit off of Lou Burdette.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a calm Sunday, no, it was a Saturday afternoon game. It was a knuckleball. And later found out that it was one of the few knuckleballs that Lou threw that year. And the why it went up there, I still don't know. But the next day, Jack Sanford was on the mound for the Angels. He threw me a slider, and I hit that one harder than I hit the one off Burdette, but it hit the facing of the upper deck farther down, left center field.
Hmm. Now, those were the years when pitching was really in control of the game. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, in those days, you saw more complete games mm-hmm. in baseball. For some reason, they let the pitchers throw longer. There were some fine relief pitchers in those days, and then we went into a period where there was more specialists in the game. It was not unusual to see four or five pitchers in a game, and closers, setup pitchers mm-hmm. became this second nature. Every ball club had one. And
but scoring, about this time now, scoring is starting to become a problem. And I mean, by the next year, we had Gibson in 68, I think, with his 1.16 ERA. Why do you think pitchers were so dominant?
Well, they were talking about the height of the mound, too, in those days.
Right.
They raised the mound up a few inches, and they seemed to think that had some effect, but I honestly cannot tell you that I noticed any difference between the height of the mound in those days. I hit mm-hmm. When it was up, and I hit when it was down, and I couldn't tell any difference. I always thought, really, what they should do is have the pitchers throw uphill. Mm-hmm. they wouldn't do that, of course.
Right. Now, 68, the All-Star game, and an injury. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That was in the Astrodome in Houston, and I was playing first base. Kurt Flood was the hitter. He hit a ground ball to shortstop to Jim Fregosi of the Angels. Jim threw a low throw to first base. It was not a bad throw, just a low throw, and I stretched out, caught the ball. A lot of people don't remember this, but Kurt Flood was out at first base. Then my foot gave way, and in the Astrodome, there was no sunlight or rain on the soil, and it was kind of like dead soil mm-hmm. around the bases. And my foot gave way, and I couldn't go left or right. I had to go right over on my leg, and I completely did a split. I'd never done a split before, but I did it that day or that night. And that injury was a really a freak injury. And it tore some things below my knee, my left knee. Mm-hmm. It tore the fascia, the covering of my hamstring muscle. Mm-hmm. And it tore the muscle itself, and it pulled a small piece of bone away from the pelvis where the hamstring was attached. And I was out for the rest of the season, except the last 5 days of the season. And the only reason I played those is because I didn't want to go into the winter thinking I could never play again. But there was some thought by several of the doctors that I wouldn't be able to play again.
Wow.
Had it completely torn away from the pelvis, mm. I probably wouldn't have been able to play again. But I worked very hard that winter and came back, and in 1969 had the best year I ever had in baseball. And maybe that was a blessing in disguise that I worked so hard that winter to get back in shape and be able to play.
What sort of things did you do that winter? I mean,
did a lot of running, lifting, strengthening that hamstring muscle up. And mm-hmm. I think that's what really helped me.
Okay, so you're coming into spring training now after coming off that injury. What was going through your mind?
Would I be able to play, really? I was really not in condition to play those last few days. I probably shouldn't have played, but I just couldn't not play and go into the season wondering about it. Well, I still wasn't sure, right, even after playing those last 5 games of the season. But I felt good the start of that spring training, and after a while I knew I was going to be able to play. And things just kind of fell into place that year for me.
Now you're playing first base, third base. I know that you moved around a lot.
Billy Martin was a manager, and he moved me around quite a bit. And he said many times that year that he appreciated my willingness to move from first to third, because it really helped our ball club, because we had two guys, Rich Rollins was a third baseman, and Don Mincher was a first baseman that could play.
What was Billy like to play for?
Billy was, I think, one of the finest managers on the field that I've ever seen. I mean, he knew the game better than a lot of other managers, but it was the stuff outside the lines with Billy that always got him in trouble. But he was a tough manager. Some managers manage different ways. Sam Mealy was a very quiet guy, let the guys play, and kept the guys on the bench that weren't playing happy. Billy was, I think, a manager that ruled the game with fear. Mm-hmm. He intimidated a lot of the younger players, a lot of the veteran players like myself. It didn't bother, but the younger players he had, he struck some fear in their hearts.
Now that's interesting, because Billy was, what, about 5'9", 100?
He was a little guy, but he was a tough little guy.
60 pounds, soaking wet.
That's right. I think the thing that I remember about Billy managing was that he didn't let the players beat themselves. He was very strict on fundamentals, mm-hmm. and the little things that were important to him.
He had played with the Twins at one point,
didn't he? He played second base. He came up and played right beside me when I was playing first. And, and then he became a coach. He was our third base coach in 65 when we won the pennant, and played in the World Series. And he was a scout. Mm-hmm. And then he managed in the minor leagues and then came back as the big league manager. But he's only there 1 year in 1969.
Why is that?
Well, Billy got into a scuffle with one of our pitchers, and I think that was probably one of the reasons he got fired. Mm-hmm. But then he went on to other clubs like the Tigers. He won there. He went to Yankees and became manager, was in and out of there as a manager, and was very successful. And I think the only club that he didn't really win was with the Texas Rangers.
Right. Well, he was with the A's for a while. He had those really young
pitchers. I was actually doing the telecasts out there when Billy came as a manager, and I was a hitting instructor for him with the Oakland A's. So I knew Billy very well.
He got criticized a lot for on that team for pitching those young pitchers long and hard.
He did, but I think the reason was he did is that he didn't have the pitchers in the bullpen that, mm-hmm. that could come in and close the games for him like he needed.
Right.
But the one year strike shortened season, they won the championship of the Western Division. So. Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to 69. So can you describe, when did you clinch that's the first year of division ball. What was that like now, not having first division, second division anymore? Now you have East and West.
I think 1969 might have been the best team that the Twins ever had, in my opinion, for the fact that we had Rod Carew there, which we didn't have in 1965.
Right.
We had Cesar Tovar. We didn't have him in 65. And of course, Tony Oliva was great, and our pitching staff was pretty darn good too. We had Baranowski from the left side, and Al Worthington. We had good relief pitching and some good starters, and I had my best year. So I think that was a great club.
What was it like now having to go and win a division title before you could get to a World Series? Before that, it was straight to the series?
Well, it was different. That was different, all right. And we still felt that our club could beat the Orioles in the playoffs. And then to lose three straight to the Orioles was a big shocker to us. And
do you remember much about those games?
I remember walking quite a few times in that series. Mm-hmm. I didn't get an opportunity to do a whole lot in those games, but
Did pitchers pitch around you a lot?
Yeah, they did in those in that series pretty much.
I mean, just in general, did you find pitchers pitching around you? I know you walked an awful lot.
I walked more later on in my career because I think it was a more patient and looked for better pitches to hit than I did early on. And I was more of a free swinger when I was younger and developed a better attitude at the plate as far as being more patient and having a better strike zone.
They say that was your best year. Was that because by now you understood the game more, you were more experienced, you were more patient?
Well, I think that had a lot to do with it. Physically, I was in good condition. I think that I was, it takes a long time to learn to be a good hitter. It took me a long time. I never thought I ever became I never really became the hitter that I really wanted to be, even then. It's tough. Hitting baseball, and Ted Williams said it, I have to agree, is a single most difficult thing to do in all the sports. Hitting a inning of baseball consistently is really tough to do.
Yeah, I never could. How would you describe yourself as a hitter? Just kind of give the scouting report on Harmon Killebrew.
Well, as a young hitter, I was a high average hitter, believe it or not. I used to hit the ball all over the ballpark, and I talked to a great hitter when I was about 18, by the name of Ralph Kiner.
Sure.
And Ralph, of course, was a great long ball hitter, and he said that he thought that if I would move up on the plate and pull a ball more, I'd hit more home runs consistently. He said you can't hit for a high average and hit the ball over the ball all over the ballpark and still hit a lot of home runs. It's just physically impossible, and Ralph was right. So I tried to move up on the plate a little more and pull more, and I hit more home runs, which I thought did help the ball club more, because home runs do drive in runs, and it worked out pretty well.
Okay. So 69, you have your best season, and you go in and talk to Mr. Griffith, or by this time you have an agent?
No, still negotiating by myself, and Mr. Griffith rewarded me after that good year that I had, and made the most money I ever made in baseball the next year, which was $120,000. And I was one of the better paid players, I guess, at that time.
Mm-hmm. I can still remember Sport Magazine running a story, who'd be the first $200,000 player.
When Nolan Ryan made $1 million, we all thought, my goodness, that's incredible for a pitcher, especially. Mm-hmm.
Right.
To make $1 million.
And now the major league average is about $1.5 million, I think, or two.
Something like that, yeah.
Right. When did the players' union come in? Did you remember much of a movement by then?
Well, Marvin Miller, when he first came in, I can't remember what year that was, but when Marvin Miller came in as head of the players' union, that was... That was when things started to dramatically turn around. Mm-hmm. The year after I was out of baseball was when free agency came in, which was 1976. Oh, that was really the big turnaround,
right.
The big turnaround in baseball, and when the players started making the big salaries and long-term contracts came into existence. And
now, but in 69, you're still on a one-year deal year to year, is that correct?
One year at a time. That's the way we did it. If you had a good year, they paid you for that year that you had the year before. And if you had a bad year, you went the other way. I remember one year I led the league in RBIs and only hit 26 home runs or 28 or something like that. And Mr. Griffith wanted to give me a cut in salary. And as I look back, maybe he was right. I should have hit more home runs.
Did he get that cut?
I don't think he got it, but.
Okay, what were you, by this time, what were you doing in the off seasons?
By 1969, I think I was still working and doing different things in the winter at that time. Maybe that was the first year I didn't. Mm-hmm. I can't remember.
Now, had you were you now living in Minnesota?
No, not until 1971. I think was the first year I lived year round in Minnesota.
Mm. Where did you live before that?
Out in Idaho and Oregon. Mm-hmm. Used to go home every winter. Then I worked for the gas company in the wintertime out there. I think I was still working for the gas company. I'm not sure.
It's a little different.
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, those things all run together. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I should have looked that all up.
That's okay, I did. Okay, so 1970, now you're playing for Bill Rigney. What was that like?
Well, having seen Mr. Rigney manage on the other side of the field, I thought it would be fun to play for Bill Rigney. Mm-hmm. And we went on to win that year, won the divisional championship with him managing.
Right.
So that was a good year. And we had the same result against the Orioles in the playoffs and lost three straight to the Orioles, and we went home, they went to the World Series.
Right. Do you remember much about that series?
In the 70 series?
The against the Orioles.
Oh, our series against right. The Orioles. Well, I don't remember a whole lot about it, except that was the year they had the 420 game winners, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe it was.
Yeah, and I think Mike Cuellar hit a grand slam home run against us in Minnesota, won one game.
Mm-hmm.
No, I can't remember.
What was the difference between playing for Billy and playing for Bill Rigney?
Totally different types of managers. Mm-hmm. Rigney, having come from California, was